and I'm gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. Like what? Like what? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What'd I do?
Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
A jury of your peers having found you guilty. 10 years.
What? Come on.
I was in jail, too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning and welcome to Crossroads on our Tuesday weekly radio broadcast. Crossroads is brought to you by the Pacifica Radio Network and is heard around the world on WPFW 89.3 FM. Your station for jazz and justice. As usual, we try to bring you a different show or topic that will hopefully stimulate some thought processes on what we're dealing with, the criminal injustice system. Our show this morning deals with dignity for incarcerated women and girls. And our guest, a special guest, is Andrea James, National Counselor for Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls. But before we get to Angela and the grapevine, I just want to say that we lost a friend last week named Rudolph Rudy Yates. He was a director and one of the founders of EFEC, Efforts for Ex-Convict. It was the first halfway house in the country directed, operated, and managed by returning citizens. And all the employees at EFEC were returning citizens, and they've been in business for 44 years. Rudy was our guest twice this year. He was scheduled to come on. He and I, along with Herb Boxdale, used to do a weekly or monthly show once a month on WOL to do the Petey Green Live Broad Community Roundtable with Rudy Yates, Herb Boxdale, and a few other gentlemen. So my hat's off to Rudy. And let me say this, that Rudy saved a lot of people's lives. He was the only halfway house in town that would take people who had sexual offenses, and the other halfway houses wouldn't. So a lot of times, Rudy would risk his program was life and step on the limb and bring people into his halfway house. And believe this, he's been threatened. Guys threatened to hurt him, to injure him, to take him off the count, do all kinds of things. But this guy stayed true to the code. So to Rudolph Rudy Yates, the director of EFEC, and I'm telling you, me, him, Petey Green, Ellen Phelps, Roach Henry's mother, Ike Hill, and Reverend Griffin Smith, back in 64, they were fighting and struggling to get the first halfway house in the country and in D.C., staffed, owned, operated, and managed by returning citizens. So we lost a giant. And for a lot of the folks who are walking the streets now, and this guy brought your father, uncle, or mother-in-law out of the institution when other halfway houses were not accepting. So to Rudolph Yates, we take a hat off to a giant. He was scheduled to be on our show twice this year. And every time we scheduled him, he was sick. So I'm sorry we weren't able to introduce you to Rudy, Rudolph Rudy Yates. Thank you for EFEC and for all the lives you saved, man, with EFEC. And for Miss Ellen Phelps, Roach Henry's mother, Reverend Griffin Smith, Ike Hill, and a whole lot of others, man. And Reggie Frog Robinson, these guys risk their lives to bring us out in the streets. I just want to say that at the top of the show. Now we'll get to what we call the grapevine, information that you can use. The grapevine. Hey. Congress is allotted a daily meal stipend of $79 per congressman. The average SNAP benefit per person is $188 for a month. The congressmen get $2,320 a month in free lunch meals at the Congress, at the U.S. Congress, while the average SNAP benefit per month is $188. Man, something is wrong with these numbers. The Trump administration authorized a $20 billion financial lifeline for Argentina. It faces an economic crisis. The deal has raised major questions and criticism about its merits. President Trump also said it's contingent on Argentinian President Milei's party winning the election later this month. This A dance at Louisiana prison gives fathers and daughters a rare moment to unite. Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Leslie Harris has missed most milestones in his daughter's life while serving decade-long sentences, a sentence in Louisiana for armed robbery, and is unlikely to get out before her prom, her graduation, maybe even her wedding. But for one night at Louisiana's largest maximum security prison, Harris made his own moment with his 17-year-old daughter while donning a custom tuxedo, clutching a bouquet of roses, and uniting at a Louisiana prison gives father and daughters a rare moment to reunite. The prison's first Father Day daughter dance, where they embrace to Stevie Wonder's "Isn't She Lovely" at a pink heavily party this month that was widely shared on social media. "Seeing her in a dress, crying and running to me just broke me down," said Harris, who has 9 years left on his sentence in Louisiana. Connecting fathers and daughters is crucial. Please keep this program up and expand it across the country. ICE raids aren't just about immigration. They're about billions in profits. 90% of ICE detainees are held in private prisons. Those companies make more money when more people are locked up. Their stocks spike with new ICE contracts. Former ICE officials get cushy jobs at the same companies, and they spend billions lobbying politicians to keep the machine running. And that's been what we call the grapevine, information that you can use. Thank you for tuning in to the grapevine. And this morning we got our special guest, Miss Andrea James. Andrea is the founder and executive director of the National Council for Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls. Founder of Families for Justice is Healing and author of Upper Bunkies Unite and Other Thoughts on the Politics of Mass Incarceration. She is a 2015 Soros Justice Fellow, recipient of the 2016 Robert F. Kennedy Human Rights Award. As a former criminal defense attorney and former incarcerated woman, Andrea shares her personal and professional experience to raise awareness of the effects of incarceration on women, on themselves, their children, and communities. Good morning, Andrea James. Oh, you look beautiful.
Yes, you do. Love this new
good
look.
Morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. Brown.
How you doing?
Always such a pleasure to be invited onto this show.
It's a pleasure seeing you. We said you look good.
You look
Everybody
fabulous.
Don't know we're on Zoom, so we can see you. You can see us, but our other listeners can only hear us. So that's why I looked at you. You look beautiful this morning, Andrea. Thank you.
Thank you so very much. Thank you so very much. And Mr. and Mrs. Brown, Merry Christmas.
Oh, you beat me to it. I was saving that for last.
Well, you can say it again. That's your signature.
That's
all
right.
Because the name of our topic this morning is Dignity for Incarcerated Women and Girls. And Andrea has been on the forefront for the past couple of decades, fighting on behalf of women and girls. And I'm telling you, she is a go-getter. She's leading the charge. She's out front. And I don't know of anyone else who's been fighting as diligently, as passionately as Andrea has. And it blew my mind when we met over 12 years ago. And you said that I was surprised that you were a former attorney who was incarcerated. And because of that incarceration, it turned your life around and gave you a new perspective. What happened to get you involved in this work, Andrea?
Well, you know, I had been involved in it. I was a criminal defense attorney, but I had been raised up by, you know, Black people in the community of Roxbury, Massachusetts. My parents, my grandparents, my aunts and uncles, who were all dedicated to the movement, to the social movement of liberation of Black people. So this has always been an issue that I've been aware of. It's what informed my decision with school to try and do as well as I could so I could go to college and then to go to law school. So it started there. I have to give credit to my family who instilled in me the fight for justice. And then I did become a criminal defense attorney and was in the courts here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and, you know, just saw a lot of things, saw the disparities in Black people, the rates of our incarceration, and, you know, just really understood about the effects of incarceration on women, but it wasn't until, you know, I was convicted of wire fraud. I made a mistake in my law practice, and I was afraid to tell anybody about it. I mentor young women lawyers about this today, to find a mentor. Find a mentor who's going to help you if you get in trouble, so that when you get in trouble, because lawyers do, all professionals, everybody, doesn't matter what you
do, there you go.
Will make a mistake at times. It doesn't define who you are, and it shouldn't define the rest of your life. But I was afraid to tell anybody, and so I tried to cover it up. I moved some money around and shouldn't have done it, and I ended up going to federal prison for 2 years for wire fraud. And I think what's the most important thing about us, accepting our responsibility is being transparent about any harm that we've caused and being accountable. And I think that I've spent, you know, I have an unshakable integrity. And I think that I've spent the remainder of my life fighting and making sure that I'm held accountable, but also fighting on behalf of others. But, you know, I walked into that federal prison, Mr. Brown, and it just broke my heart. Knowing all these things, I come and I live in the most incarcerated community still today. We've been in our home for five generations in the African-American community of Roxbury, and it's the most incarcerated corridor in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. I was a practicing criminal defense attorney. Most of my friends did not have the privilege of education that my family afforded me, and most of them, while I went off to college, went off to prison. So I was acutely aware of these issues. But going to prison, in a woman's prison, just shook me to my core. And I was also a mother. You know, my husband, God rest his soul, we lost him 3 years ago unexpectedly.
Wow. I'm sorry. We didn't know that. I'm sorry to hear that, Andre.
Yeah, there's no words. No words. But,
wow.
You know, thank you. But my I was a mother, and we had had our last child, our son, John Jr., and you know, he was 5 months old when I had to leave, separate from him and go to sit in a federal prison in Danbury, Connecticut for 2 years. And so that experience, I was very fortunate. My husband was the salt of the earth. He had had similar experience. He was from New York, had been incarcerated in and out since he was 16 at Rikers Island, all the way through the state and federal system. So he understood, and he made sure that he brought my baby boy and my daughter, at the my youngest at the time. I have three daughters. My youngest at the time, who was only 12, he put them in that car at 3 o'clock in the morning every Saturday morning and drove them to
Denver. All right.
So I was very fortunate, but
yes.
I'll never forget that experience, Mr. Brown. If you're ever in a woman's prison at 3 a.m, you hear the stifled sobs of a mother who just can't bear it and trying not to disrupt the sleep of the women all around you, because we're piled in there like a slave ship. And you know, watching women mopping floors, we're the labor of the prison. You know, they put us to work doing everything, and mopping the floor and just pass out, just drop to her knees, because she is overcome with grief and sorrow from having been separated from her children. And, you know, we're talking about not sentences like mine. I did 2 years, and that was horrible. One day is horrible when you separate a mother from a child. But I was in prison with sisters who were drug conviction, drug conspiracies. But for the charge of conspiracy, the federal government could never have justified their prosecution and sentencing at the rates that they were. For the years that they were sentenced.
Mm-hmm.
And so we organized. It wasn't just me. You know, Justine Moore, Virginia Douglas, Shay Smith, you know, we hunkered down and said, we're going to organize while we're in this prison. And we did. Mm-hmm. And it led eventually to a local organization here, Families for Justice as Healing. And then, of course, we were all Fed women. So when we came home, we were all coming into different states. And that was the creation of the National Council for Incarcerated, Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls.
You know, we've been following your work, and our paths has been crisscrossing. And I remember you had that big Free Her campaign in Washington, D.C.
Yes, sir.
That was about three years ago, wasn't it?
It was 2014. I'm sorry.
Wow.
2024, because it was the 10th anniversary of our first Free Her campaign in Washington, D.C., with Nkechi Taifa. And Nkechi's been rocking with us for a decade. She taught us everything we know about the federal system and got us into the Obama White House. That's how we raised President Obama's attention and were able to push, along with Amy Pover and Can-Do Clemency, more than 50 women out of the federal prison system back under President Obama's watch. And so, that was our 10th anniversary, and we were determined. You know, Michelle West was still inside, Lazar Daz was still inside, Miss Roberta Bell. I mean, we had sisters that we were still fighting for that were going on 30 plus years. And so we had to step out there and celebrate our 10th anniversary. And more than 3,000 women. From every state in the country.
That's right. Yes. We were there.
And from outside of the country, women came.
And outside of the country, women came. Sisters came all over. We now have an international division, and it's made up of, over 60 countries at this point, I think, and hundreds of women, and it's growing every day. And it's just amazing, the work that the sisters have just carried forward.
That Free Her campaign that was held in Washington blew my mind when I saw all these ladies with different T-shirts from different states participating and putting this thing together. Charles Thornton was a big supporter and contributor. And I want to say that I'm proud of it, and you are continuing this kind of work. And I also like to say that I've been reading about all these pardons, everything that's coming down. And I haven't heard of not a black woman yet.
Well, I haven't heard of a regular anybody yet. It's a pay to play these days. You know, ain't nobody getting out of us. Yeah. If you have $1 million+, and it seems like it's in the billions now, you're not even getting a look. And if anybody in that administration can hear my voice, I really want to encourage you, please. Like, come on now. Just don't just remember what it's like to be prosecuted. You know, and unjustly sentenced, so-called. So, you know, there are women who have been in prison, unjustly sentenced, who have done their time. They're in there, and they're going on their 32nd, 35th.
Jesus.
They're old. They're older now. They're grandmas now.
Right.
And we've got to show some kind of compassion. Kind of empathy. You know, you got a pardons are that we all work to get out, Alice Johnson. So, you know, what is happening on the end of the regular smegular people? You know, what's going on here? What's really happening? If you talking about things were unjust, well, these are the people who can demonstrate, men and women inside, that can come home. You done 30 years. You go, come on, Mr. Trump, President Trump, open the door and let these people come home.
You know, we did a show last week, Angie, and we mentioned that in doing the Grapevine segment, there's over 1 million women are being incarcerated worldwide, and the rate of incarceration for women is far exceeds that for men. And as you mentioned, Alice Marie Johnson was the first black woman we know to Trump pardon. She is the first and only black woman. I haven't heard of anybody else, a black woman sister, receive executive clemency or a pardon. And Alice Marie Johnson was the first black woman that we know. She was pardoned.
They have other black women have received pardons that worked on, post-incarceration pardons. But they have. There are other black women who worked on President Trump's team who have received pardons. And so we would only hope that those sisters, you know, really stay in the fight. You can't stop. We have to do whatever we can to use our voice, try and be heard. Thank God for you and Ms. Martine, who just continue to allow a platform for us, our voices to be heard, because the women are usually, as you know, Mr. Brown.
Yes.
You know, and it's not only just globally, which Angela Davis has always taught us, about our fight must be a global fight, why we advanced our work to the international level, because whether you're in the Bronx, whether you're in D.C., whether you're in Bogota, the issues of why women land on a prison bunk are all the same.
Yeah.
And 80% of these women are mothers. And
there
so
you go.
It's even more harmful because they were the primary caretakers of the brothers count too, daddies count
right.
too. But the fact of the matter is, when it comes to incarceration, 85% of currently incarcerated women were the primary caretakers
yes.
of their children. They live with their mamas. And so, and these women have been entangled in the criminal law system because of trying to make a way out of no way. And making choices out of no choice. And so we're talking poverty. We're talking maybe the illness of addiction. You know, the incidents, the levels that the numbers show us of women who have histories of sexual violence going back to their childhood is off the charts in women's prisons.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we got to work hard. We've got to continue to raise awareness. Because it creates this generational cycle, a generational cycle of poverty, a generational cycle of harm, you know, because they are the bulwark. They're the ones standing in front of all the harm. And that's why they do some of the things they do that land them on a prison bunk. They're trying to protect their babies.
Yes.
And when they take mama away, you know, the babies are left. And many of them are victimized by the same people who victimized their mother.
You know, Andrew, on this particular issue, we've been talking about elephants, and we compare elephants to what's going on to our situation. In Africa and India, they were a band of wild elephants roaming, destroying their villages, stepping on cars, just going berserk. A group of young orphan elephants. They took their mothers, killed them, and took their tusk. So as a result of these elephants were orphaned. So they didn't have any mother or father in any direction. So they went berserk. They went in the jungle and brought out some wild male elephants, some bull elephants, and introduced them to the young adolescents, orphan elephants. And would you believe in a month or two, all of the ravaging and the destruction stopped because the elder male elephants were able to communicate or relate or connect with the orphan elephants. This is some of the same things we're going on right now. A lot of kids, I run into kids all the time who don't have a place to stay. They can't go home. Home is not safe. They'd rather be in the street than be in what's going on inside of their homes. And they don't have any direction. Their mama's strung out on drugs or she's in prison. So these kids are raising themselves like the elephants were doing. We need mamas and daddy. You said something at the beginning of the show, Andrea, that that your husband came to see you every Saturday with your kids. And I've been to a few women prisons on visiting day, and the most heartbreaking experience is to go to a women's prison on visiting day, and it's less than five or two or three women. Men don't go to visit the mothers or their ex-girlfriends or whatever. And that is a heartbreaking experience to see these mothers and these little kids, and no males in the visiting room except for the correctional staff.
Right.
Have you witnessed that?
Oh, of course. I mean, I lived in a women's prison, but I also visited, you know, my husband in men's prisons all over the place. You know, when he went into the feds, they move you around all over the feds, driving this little raggedy car with a hole in the floor, trying to find him in prison somewhere on a cornfield. You know, so I know this. I know the long lines. You know, I have a cousin who, thank God, is home now after 25 years from San Quentin. You know, I would go every year until they wouldn't let me in anymore after my incarceration. But, you know, the line used to be down around the parking lot of the prison. Oh, you name it. Wives, baby mamas, girlfriends, mamas, grandmamas, everybody with these little babies in tote that they done had to bring pack a lunch for. And the kids are crying and they tired and they had to drive 2 days to get there. I mean, I've seen it on both sides. I've been a lawyer that's had to go to prisons and, you know, visit people. And there ain't nobody at a woman's prison. You know, there were times when my husband and I and maybe one other person, grandma usually, Grandma Phyllis Hardy, God rest her soul.
We miss her. Yeah, I miss grandma.
And Pop Willie,
Is he still living? Is Pop still living?
Oh, sir. No, sir. No, sir.
She let go.
When he passed away, they were in the same hospital, and Pop Willie passed on, and she let go that the day they were burying him. So, but we cherish them, and that we know that we're not afraid in this climate, what's happening right now. We're not afraid. We refuse to be afraid. Strange things are happening with Black women-led organizations, particularly Black women-led organizations that are in the fight for justice. You know, we don't quite know why or where it's coming from, but it's happening with our funding and some other things. So millions of dollars in funding have left this space, but we are undeterred. Yeah. We started this work in a women's prison in the yard, and we gonna continue. We sold dishcloths. And whatever we have to go back to continue to do the work that we do, we will absolutely continue to do this because the stakes are too high. And we say not another one. We have developed reimagining communities so that babies, we know a very hyper-local organizing model, 5 blocks at a time, so that we know who are the children in our neighborhoods. Who are they? Are they okay? Do they need a winter coat? Do they have somebody who's feeding them every day? Is somebody checking on them? Do they have a safe place to be?
Yes, that's right.
And so we can do this. We as our people in our own communities, now is the time with all the crisis that's going on and all the uncertainty that's going on, particularly in Black and brown communities. Now is the time for us to circle the wagons and create those models that rely upon us. Rely upon us to take care of our babies. And in one generation, we can turn this around.
Andrea, what do you say to those folks who are listening, who have a loved one incarcerated and want to see some young kids in the street and they want to do something? What can people do who are listening to what you're saying this morning, who want to get involved? Because as we said before, the rate of women incarceration is over 1 million worldwide, globally. And our show now goes global. Your organization, the National Council for Incarcerated and Former Incarcerated Women and Girls, has gone national and international.
Yes.
So we need to plug into this question. Why is it, what is your feeling or thoughts on why is women, the rate of women being incarcerated increasing 2 and 3-fold times, and more than what the men's rate is? Over 1 million women are locked up worldwide, and the numbers are increasing. Why is this happening?
Well, the Sentencing Project put an interesting report out, an updated interesting report out very recently on the incarceration of women in this country. Now, in the United States, for Black women, we have always had the highest numbers of incarceration in the United States. I'll start there. But for Black women, those numbers have gone down. But ironically, the incarceration of white women has increased. We know the opioid crisis, all kinds of things. And just the fact that, the evisceration of the care of any women in the country, period, has, raised the level of attention and incarceration. But even though the rate of Black women has decreased in the United States, the fact of the matter still remains, our incarceration was so hyper that we still are overwhelmingly the ones who are incarcerated in prisons. We still have a long way of decreasing our numbers. But it's also the effect of that incarceration, decades and decades of incarceration of Black women that have our communities in the state that they're in now, and the men. And then globally, we see what's happening. It's colonization. It's the extraction of resources. It's poverty. It's the issues that people are trying to get to the United States for a better life. It's people, who are going against. It's not a cakewalk to get here. How they paint the picture of just everyday people who just want to survive, who don't want to get killed, who don't want to be on an autocratic regime, who are fleeing war-torn communities, who are fleeing famine, and taking the risk, particularly for the women who are right now in some weird space in the world, trying to get to a safer place with their children, and what that means. So, immigrants are a vital part of our community. We have allowed us to believe, to drink the Kool-Aid about they're the problem. capitalism is the problem. Greed is the problem. And so these are the reasons why, globally, the incarceration rate of women is the way that it is.
Yes. It's scary that if Trump can give $20 billion to Argentina, Israel gets $10 million a day. Israel, $360 billion goes to Israel every year. And they say less than $20 billion can solve the homeless problem in Washington, in the United States. All the bees that's going out of the country need to be focused on inside. And as you said before, we are the targets of a lot of this unjust, unfair situation. And it's about greed and larceny. It's about money. Over 65,000 people has been incarcerated by ICE since Trump started this deportation movement. And this thing is causing all kinds of problems. And the private prisons companies are making billions. Most of the detainees or immigrants who are being deported or detained are being held in private prisons owned by CoreCivic and the GEO Group, yep, among others. Yes. And this thing is, it's a multi-billion dollar industry. If you can spend $360 billion to Israel a year, $300 billion to Ukraine, $20 billion to Argentina, it won't take nowhere near that kind of money to solve our problems. And when you say about women in prison, you shouldn't be locking up our mamas. We've been pushing Andrea for some time that a woman who have a kid 10 years or under should not be incarcerated unless it's a very violent, mean, vicious offense. Mothers should go on with the technology. They can allow them in the community to be on house arrest to maintain control and custody and care of their kids. We're locking up mamas, and all these guys that make these laws were kids. Can't you understand or relate these gentlemen who make these laws, understand what it's like to be a kid and be without mama? When you lock up mama, you create a sore or problem that would never, ever go away.
Right. Oh, absolutely. First of all, we need to boycott, divest, and sanction. We should be sending no money to Israel while they're bombing Palestinians and creating the genocide that has been created of Palestinian people. That's number one. Number two, you know, we really just, we weren't brought here as black people to be fully citizens of this country. Right. We have never been accepted in that manner.
Never.
We are still here. We are still standing. And I commend our people for the strength that we have. But we have to understand, Mr. Brown, you raise a very good and important point about technology. We were brought here as labor. And what we fail to understand and why we need to stop trying to separate us from other brown, black and brown people is that we've got to do something different and come together. And technology is a huge issue that we better stop paying attention to, because we're not needed anymore as labor. So what's going to happen to us?
This is WPFW, your station for jazz and justice. This is where you hear the truth about what's going on in this nation we live in. We're speaking with Andrea James, National Counselor for Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls, doing outstanding work.
We just want to say that we bring on folks like Andrea, who we've met through the years, people who are committed, who are passionate, who's doing the work, whether they got the funds or don't have the funds, because they've been through it. And sometimes your worst disappointment is a blessing in disguise. For you to get locked up as a former defense attorney and to go into prison and to see and experience this firsthand changed your whole life and gave you a new direction and a new purpose. Sometimes we look at situations that are painful or really traumatic, but it ain't that just to cause pain in the book. Sometimes a storm come to clear the way, to clear the path. And what you went through, it cleared the path. And I'm so glad that you who you are and where you are right now and what you had to go through. So going through prison and coming out or whatever, if you can take that lesson and flip that script, because like they say, a smile is on a frown upside down, and the problem is the beginning of a new beginning. And you came out of that, lady, and you're saving lives, you're touching lives. I'm so proud of you. You even make my hair grow, and I don't even have no hair, Andrew.
To call in and speak with Andrea, please call 202-588-0893.
We have a couple calls on right now. Folks want to ask you a question or comment on what we're talking about, Andrew. Mike, want to take our first caller? There you go. You're on the air. Question or comment, please, for Andrea James.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen and ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, I'd just like to say, if I can, I'm listening to you and you're so correct, but we have to, you know, in a way, put our emotions in connection with the realism that I think our country has done a lot good to help immigrants. You know, they are a high number. They outnumber African Americans by 3-1. So we can't say that America is all bad. You know, I think America has been great overall, because when we look at the global scene, you know, some of these other countries need to do more to stop fighting and to start, developing some discipline and helping their own. You know, we have these people come here, but they're piling up and they're piling up. And we've got Americans that's suffering. We have senior citizen black women. I know senior black people, they go to bingo. When I go to bingo, they're there, but they're complaining about our people not getting what they deserve. They're not getting proper shelter and housing. Many housing availability is going to the immigrants who pay low rent. They don't have to pay much rent. So what is it about our Americans that's suffering? And, you know, that's why I say we have to discipline our emotions and understand that the world is not America. America is a tiny, minuscule little place. When it comes to this whole world, the world needs to discipline itself. And I'd like to get your opinion about what I've said.
Go ahead, Andrew. You have it.
Well, listen, thank you so very much for your comment. You know, and as a black woman, I'm, you know, incredibly understanding of your comments. There is more than enough to go around. And we cannot buy into the level of austerity of resources and money that is available in this country, the most richest and powerful country
in the world.
And so I absolutely agree that we need to create a shift in how this government cares for our people as black people in this country. And that there is absolutely no reason that anybody should be in a state of struggle with immigrants in this country. Because, you know, if you really, if you're not Native American, you're an immigrant. Black people built the country after we were brought here.
Yes.
But there's absolutely no reason why there is not enough money, enough resources to, as Mr. Brown stated a little while ago, about $20 billion is nothing, to make sure that we are all well taken care of, that there is a basic level of income that cares for everyone. And that is possible in this country. And so our fight needs to be about that, about the closing that wealth gap, where we have 1% of the billionaires who have everything and all of the money, and 99% of the people who are in an absolute state of struggle. It's not necessary. And so I think it's so very important for us to, respectfully, ma'am, think about that and really put the charge, the indictment on the wealth gap, the greed, the way of capitalism. And, you know, I'm from here. I was born and raised here. I'm an American. You know, I'm proud of my country and I'm proud of my people here in this country. And so I'll be the first to stand up and say that. But our fight is not with immigrant people. Our fight is with the governments that choose to pit us against brown people.
There you go.
We need to tell them to cut it out. And to stop being the greedy capitalists that they are, and spread the wealth, share the wealth.
That's right.
And one thing that we definitely need to remember and understand is after enslavement, it was against the law for black people to learn how to read and write, grow crops, and raise animals. Those are the ways to make a living. So this is the America that we live in and have always lived in. It's never been equal for black people.
Okay. You know what? We got another caller. Thanks. Thank you for calling in, young lady. We got another caller on for our guest, Andrew James. It's two calls. Come on, we take the first caller. You're on air, please. Question or comment?
This is Rick calling long distance from Germany, man.
Boy, I knew you would. I knew you'd be calling. You call in from Germany every month. Man, if you don't call, I feel like I'm sick. Wow. You got the call to keep me well, man. Come on with it, Rick.
Hello to your guest, and hello to Miss Mertine there in the studio.
Hi, Rick.
I just want to ask your guest about the rate of black women going to prison. Is domestic violence and violence among us black folks a problem? Do we need to heal male and female relations to prevent more black women and young girls from going to prison? I'm done.
Good question. Good question.
Yeah.
Thank you for that question. And absolutely, it's one of the top underlying reasons that land women on a prison bunk. And I made a reference earlier that, you know, sexual violence, that it also includes domestic violence, often starts with the history. When you look at the history of women on a prison bunk, that those areas of violence start as young as when they're children, as young as when they're little girls. And so they, have a hard way to go. And we don't have the resources turn towards healing. You've raised an absolutely important point. It's why when we were in the prison, we named our first organization Families for Justice as healing, because justice needs to be about healing.
Yes.
First and foremost. And so hurt people hurt people. Healthy people thrive. And so we need to focus on healing people. It's what we build those infrastructures that we call reimagining communities to do. We don't need to incarcerate people. Prisons are harmful, violent, mean places. They only cause further harm. So if a man or a woman, the worst case of domestic violence I witnessed was a woman in prison, you know, a women who were in a relationship and in prison together. And I never forgot that. So it's across the board. But our children are affected by it. Our children see things. They see, just seeing, witnessing violence is a traumatic experience. And so we have a lot. We've been through a lot as a people, and the trauma is real.
Yes.
And prisons aren't the answer for healing us. We have a long, long, long way to go. So, it's important. Thank you for raising the issue about healing, sir. It's at the top of what we need to do.
Thank you, Rick, for calling in. Rick has been sick, and you've been in our prayers, man. We've been praying for you. He calls in every week, Andre, from Germany.
Wow.
He's a faithful listener, and thank you, man. I hope your health is getting better, Rick. We'll take our next caller, please. Question or comment?
My name is Abdul Tawab. I'm with an organization called We Need All of Us. It's a weneedallofus.com. It's unique that we are having realized that the situation we in is not by accident. This is a real conspiracy. The economic situation we're in is not an accident. But why is 99% of the world, who runs the world, who makes everything go and work, why haven't we come to the intellectual realization that we must begin to pool our resources together and start correcting these problems ourselves? $10 a piece. You take 40 million people, 50 million people, $10 a piece, that's $500 million. We need to start using our intellectual skills and capabilities to start eradicating our own problems. Thank you.
There you go.
You're correct.
You want to respond?
And another thing is pooling those resources to start cooperative businesses. Jessica Gordon-Dembrand wrote this amazing book. I'd encourage people to check it out. That was responsive to how philanthropy had really destroyed the futures of black farmers and people in the South who were receiving grants to do the type of work that we still are fighting to do today. And her book is called Collective Courage. And she explains how important it is for us to turn inward and to do as the brother just said, be collective in our resources, but also be collective in how we create our businesses. Cooperatives saved the Black community post-slavery. It helped to build Black Wall Street and other places that so many have never heard of that were like Black Wall Street, healthy, thriving, economically yes. strong places to live. And so we have to learn as a people about these alternative methods of collective work and collective pooling of resources. And unfortunately, a lot of us still are extractive. A lot of us are in an individualist state of mind, and we've got to put that down. You know, the problems are too big, but locally we can be collective in our thinking and create what this brother is talking about. It's absolutely necessary.
Let me throw this in, Andrew. What's your plans for the future? What are you, because I know you've been doing a lot of groundwork, doing legislative, doing advocacy, but I know that you are, your vision, it goes far beyond what we're talking about right now. What's your plans for the future?
Well, I'm actually a candidate for governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts right
now. Wow.
Our governor's race is November of 2026, but, you know, we're running now. And at some point, Mr. Brown, you're right. I've been doing this work on the ground post-incarceration for 15 years now, and I've been going up to my state of Massachusetts, to my state house, drafting legislation, federal and state, working really hard to make change. And at some point, you just have to stand up and say enough is enough. You ain't hearing us. Yes. You're not thinking about the everyday people. You know, Massachusetts is in a quandary right now. We're one of the wealthiest states in the country. We have the highest rents, the highest housing prices. We're third in the country for healthcare costs. You know, we're eighth in the country for the highest food prices. Black people make up 7% of the population here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Mr. Brown, we make up 51% of the jail and prison population.
That's crazy.
And the current governor is talking about, and we have been fighting it for 6 years and stopping it when it was at $50 million. She has just increased that amount that she intends on paying for a new women's prison to $360 million. Now, we have one of the lowest incarceration populations in the country here in Massachusetts, sir. Mm-hmm. We have about 200 women on any given day in our only state prison, which happens to be the oldest women's prison in the country. We were the first to have a women's prison 150 years ago. If you gonna tell me that we're not smart enough, that we haven't come up with what we have come up with,
yes.
as formerly incarcerated women called what different looks like, you're crazy, because we are smarter than this, and we are not going to allow a $360 million prison to be built in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. That is just nonsensical. It is fiscal irresponsibility when so many people in the Commonwealth are just in an absolute state of struggle. So, yeah, I threw the gauntlet down. I'm older. I want to take the licks on behalf of my people. I'm not afraid. I'm going to stand up. I've been threatened. I've been told I better go into this with my eyes wide open. Well, they can't get no wider open. And
right.
so I have behind me an army of young people with direct life experience that want to run. They want to run. There's 1.7 million of us in the Commonwealth that don't vote. We're bringing those people back into the electoral process. We live in a country, whether you like it or not, that the electoral process decides what happens to us.
Yes. So
I'm not with the argument that, oh, I don't believe in voting. No, go and vote.
You better.
I live in Massachusetts and you can hear my voice. Come on, November 2026 and vote for me.
Thank you. Oh, no votes. For those people who don't vote, you vote me indirectly for the opposite party. We'll take our next caller before we wrap up the show. You're on the air, please. Question or comment? Hello. We go to the next one. Well, go ahead, Mike. I'm following your lead.
Hello. Question. Good morning. This is Darling from Arlington, Virginia. Can you hear me?
Yes,
yes,
ma'am.
We can.
Well, I don't claim to have a solution, but I just want to offer a few things for you to consider. There is a verse in the Bible that talks about, when my people who are called by my name shall humble themselves and pray,
yes.
and shall turn from their wicked ways, And then it talks about how God would heal the land. Now, we've been lied to about God, so I don't want to insult anybody who says, look, that God stuff is not for me. I just want us to re-examine, because I think that the solution is a spiritual one. Because with all of the great solutions that we have not come together in the unity that we need. We have a controversy over just like boycotting Christmas or boycotting the very institutions who don't want to hire us, the very CEOs that make 45% increase while their workers only make a 1% increase stretched out over 3 years. Until we find a unified solution and stop fighting one another down, I don't think it's going to work. Because remember, we did all of this. I come from a community right across the bridge from Washington, D.C., that had black businesses. We worked together. Mm-hmm. But some people, I'm not going to make it a racial thing, but some people are so mean and nasty. Burned down Tulsa, Oklahoma, shot drugs into my community to where people have been put away for 20, 30, 40 years and are just coming back out and cannot get housing. Who demanded that the black church preacher tell you to sit down, shut up, and take what the master delivers to you, and pointed out those scriptures instead of telling you the book of Judith that says that this woman went down and took the head of the person that had everyone terrorized because they were so scared and shaking in their boots that they didn't want to do nothing. But she said, wait a minute, just don't ask me how I did it. When she came back, her and her handmaid had the head of the terrorist in her hand, and they stopped terrorizing God's people. So I'm going to just leave it there, and I thank you for having my comments this morning.
Thank you for your comments. We got a minute or so. Andrea James, you want to give us a closing comment and how your contact information, how people can contact you if they want to follow up on what we talked about this morning?
Absolutely. Please reach out to us. We are the National Council for Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls. And you can check our work out at nationalcouncil.us. And you can reach me at ajames@thecouncil. That's spelled T-H-E, like the council is spelled council.us. And we'll be really happy to talk to anybody. And we've got an amazing national sisterhood. I guarantee no matter where you are in the country, we have sisters who are doing some phenomenal work to reform this criminal law system and just to heal our communities and our people. So reach out and we'll plug you in wherever you are.
Thank you. Our guest has been Andrea James, National Council for Incarcerated and Former Incarcerated Women and Girls. And she's working locally, nationally, and internationally. Our show goes internationally now. So with your global reach, we like to stay in touch and keep us abreast of what's going on so we can cross the T's and dot these I's. Because as you said before, we got a word we use, Angie. We're tired of the jiggy boogie. Every time you turn around, there's some jiggy boogie. So we got to get rid of the jiggy boogie and get people in the places like you who can make sure that the people on the ground, the small, the peons, we all can get a fair equitable treatment. We all know what the problem is. It's economics. If you're sending $500 billion around the world, $300 billion in Israel, just give us half of that and we can solve the crime. Jobs, social services reduce crime. Not the National Guard, not the police, and not these punitive laws. People, we are tired of this jiggy boogie. So I want to thank our guest, a special guest, Andrea James. Lady, I'm so proud of you. It made my hair grow.
Yes, and people should not be living in cages. Is there no words?
Right.
Living in a cage because you have a drug conviction, which is way out of line. You're going to put somebody in a cage and then you expect them to just come out and da, da, da.
Thank you.
And we need to know our histories. So there are things we have to do as a people, know our history and stand up for what we believe.
Thank you.
And write. Make a difference.
Thank you, Andrea. And thank you, our guests, for listening.
Thank you, Ms. Patine.
And you sure will be back.
Thank you.
Keep us abreast on the progress of what's going on up in Boston and around the country with women.
I certainly will.
Just give us a holler, and we'll be glad to share this with our listeners.
For sure.
And thank you. And remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty.
This is Medea Benjamin of Code Pink with the WPFW editorial. As Washington escalates towards confrontation with Venezuela, opinion polls show that in the United States and Venezuela, the majority oppose U.S. intervention. Yet instead of listening to the people, the Trump administration is charging ahead with escalation, labeling Venezuelan officials as terrorists, asserting the right to strike vessels in the Caribbean without evidence or congressional approval, tightening sanctions. This week, President Trump said something important, that he is willing to talk to President Nicolas Maduro. We hope so, but let's not be naive. The U.S. has used talks before as a cover for military action, including against Iran, engaging diplomatically one day while preparing strikes the next. So we have to ask, is this a sincere step towards peace or the prelude to something far more dangerous? The fundamental truth is that Venezuela is not our enemy, and war is not the answer. 28 million Venezuelans have already endured years of economic warfare through sanctions that block medicine, fuel, and basic goods. A U.S. military strike would only ignite an internal conflict and shatter countless lives. We've seen this story before, Iraq, Libya, Syria. So today, Code Pink calls on the White House to honor the will of the people and calls on Congress to rein in unauthorized military force and lift sanctions so Venezuelans can rebuild their own country in peace. For WPFW, I'm Medea Benjamin with Code Pink. You can learn more at codepink.org/Latin America.
Hey y'all, I am Jaren with Dreaming Out Loud.
And I'm Ron Motz with the Go-Go Museum and Cafe. This holiday season, Historic Anacostia is bringing joy from December the 11th through the 22nd.
A celebration filled with daily surprises along Marion Barry and MLK Jr. Avenue Southeast. Christmas tree lighting, live concerts at the Go-Go Museum, and holiday meals and deals from your favorite Anacostia businesses.
12 days of festive family fun as you dine, shop, and explore DC's Arts and Culture District. Powered by the Anacostia Bid, artsagogo.org. For more information.
Inviting all D.C. hand dancers, Philly boppers, Chicago steppers, Carolina shaggers, and West Coast swingers, the Treehouse Dreamers venue offers dance music from Motown and more every Friday, 1 to 5 p.m. at 4722 14th Street Northwest. DJ Jam and Dave and other fine DJs provide an atmosphere offering seniors socialization while getting much-needed quality movement through familiar tunes and dance every Friday. Details at 301-922-4064. That's 301-922-4064. WPFW offering wellness through dance, one activity at a time.
Thank you to everyone who supported WPFW on Giving Tuesday. Your generosity helps keep independent, listener-supported radio strong. If you weren't able to give earlier this week, there is always time. Every contribution at any level helps sustain the music, culture, and progressive voices you hear on WPFW every day. Our end-of-year drive begins Sunday, December 14th. For listeners with IRAs, this is also a reminder that year-end required minimum distributions are approaching. A qualified charitable distribution may be a meaningful way to support WPFW while meeting your RMD. However you choose to give, thank you for standing with community, people-powered radio. please call 202-588-9739 or visit WPFWFM.org to learn more. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Mutual aid, the act of taking care of each other, comes in many forms. One such form is supporting WPFW. At a time when so many are hurting, if you are doing well financially and want to do good, we invite you to give the gift of WPFW. Emancipatory media is truly the gift that keeps on giving. A tax-deductible donation can be made anytime at WPFWFM.org or from Sunday, December 14th through Saturday, December 20th during our pledge drive by calling 800-222-9739. It is your continued support that allows us to do the work of building a more equitable world, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, I'm Danny Glover, and you are tuned into WPFW Washington, your station for jazz.